Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Facebook, the business, is built on knowing and sharing a lot about its users. In the last big tweak to dial back privacy, the company went too far. Users revolted. The government got interested. Privacy advocates howled. Yesterday, Facebook blinked on privacy and user controls. Here's CEO Mark Zuckerberg.
A lot of what we were trying to do, we just didn't communicate as well as we could have, and a lot of it got lost in that. So the main thing that we've taken away from all of this is just that we really need to simplify the controls.
Simplify the controls. This hour On Point, Facebook and the new face of privacy. You can join the conversation. How much privacy, how much control of privacy do you want in the online world, in the world? And do you trust Facebook to do the right thing? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and, of course, on Facebook. At On Point Radio, we've got a lively and growing Facebook community debating all these issues and more every day. It's definitely worth checking out. In a moment, we'll be joined by two top online analysts with different takes on Facebook privacy and policy. But joining me first from New York is Dan Fletcher, technology reporter for Time Magazine. His big cover story this week is how Facebook is redefining privacy. He talked to Mark Zuckerberg and others at Facebook for the story. Dan, it's great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So your timing was great, or maybe you guys pushed them over the edge. I don't know, but how big a blink is this, Dan, by Facebook?
You know, it's sort of consistent with what they've done throughout their history. Facebook has a tendency to sort of push the norm, push you to share more, and then listen to what users are saying and then pull back. You know, so this is something that we've seen in their history before. And, you know, I think it is a big step, but it's interesting with Facebook. It always has to have that outcry before it happens.
How big was the outcry this time compared to earlier pushback on Facebook privacy policy?
It depends what you consider the outcry. Certainly, there was more action, sort of more interest by government officials around the world this time around. But as a percentage of their user base, it's quite small. I talked to Mark yesterday, and he pointed to when Facebook introduced the news feed in 2006, which is a real-time stream of your friends' updates. Mm-hmm. When they did that, close to 10% of their user base was revolting. They only had 10 million users at the time, and a million were up in arms. You know, the percentage, they're quickly approaching 500 million right now, and it's nowhere near 50 million people complaining.
I mean, but the thing is, with 500 million people, in a sense, Facebook's policy on privacy is the global policy on privacy.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, this is something I think Facebook has to reckon with. Their line is that they didn't change any of this, that Facebook sort of reacted to the trends that were happening online. But with 500 million people on board, which is, you know, more than a quarter of the people who are online at all, Facebook really is a trendsetter, and what they do about privacy has real implications.
Facebook bigger at 500 million than the United States. Here's a little bit from that press conference yesterday. This was a conference call feed out of Palo Alto, California, at Facebook headquarters with the CEO. What is he, 26 years old, Dan, now, Mark Zuckerberg?
Yep.
Here he is acknowledging that the company had been through a storm of controversy lately, and was delivering what he called a pretty big overhaul.
It's been a pretty intense few weeks for us, just listening to all the feedback that's coming in from the changes that we've made. And we really wanted to take the time to listen to it and make sure we understood it, and then respond not only by saying what we were going to do, but by building something and releasing it.
Building something and releasing it. And that is, Dan, what, a new control panel for Facebook users to say, here's what of mine can be shared?
That's correct. So Facebook completely overhauled their privacy controls. Before, it was sort of infamous for being complicated. Facebook has more than 50 different options you can go in and toggle to very finely tune the types of information you're sharing there. With the privacy controls they released yesterday, they took a big step, not back, but in a different direction, towards simplicity. Right now, it's so if these controls are live in your account, you can set things in just a couple of clicks. And the biggest piece of the announcement yesterday was that Facebook's going to respect these settings going forward. If they release new products, your privacy settings are going to stay with you.
Which they did not do in the past.
Right, and that's been a big point of tension in the company's history. So we'll see if they stick to that, but that certainly was a promising sign for users.
Give us a sense of the range of information, of data, that Facebook has and has shared.
It's really grown throughout the course of the site's history. And, you know, it's interesting because it's very, very intimate information that we're putting on Facebook. I mean, these aren't just, you know, meaningless status updates, although that's certainly parts of it. You know, it's photos, it's names, it's identities, it's affiliations. You know, it's pieces of data that really allow Facebook to get a sense of our whole life and approximate who we really are. And I think that's what's tremendous about Facebook and makes these privacy settings that much more important, because the information that they do have is so powerful.
And how do they turn that information into revenue?
So Facebook's managed to build what's really a robust advertising platform. So any type of information you're putting into the system, whether it's your likes, you know, your status updates, your affiliations, advertisers are able to target around. And they can do this on a very, very granular level. For example, you could target, say, a 23-year-old who just graduated from Harvard with an interest in swimming. You know, that pool may only be a couple people deep, but you can advertise it to it nonetheless. So that's why when Facebook, you know, pushes these sorts of initiatives to get you to share more, it's really part of it so they can have more advertising data to sort of market and sell.
So yesterday, their big message trying to push back this forest fire of complaint, however you wanted to define it, was we're listening and we're changing here. But if you listen, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO, still has a very, what sounds like a pretty wide open notion of what privacy is, should be, is, where it's heading. Let's listen. Here he's talking about everything moving toward openness.
There are some models and views of the world which are that all information should be kept as private as possible, and I don't think that's not what users have told us that they want. Right? I mean, users use the service because they love sharing information, right? And I think that's one of the things that that does seem like it's changing in the world.
Users use the service because they love sharing information, says Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg there yesterday, along with some kind of mea culpa, though not an outright apology. We're looking at where privacy is headed in an era when maybe Facebook is the sort of the defining franchise globally with 500 million members. Dan Fletcher is with us from Time Magazine, joining us from New York. Big cover story there this week on Facebook and privacy. And right now from Washington, we're joined by Mark Rotenberg. He's president and executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. This month, he spearheaded the Federal Trade Commission complaint by consumer groups that put the heat on Facebook. Mark Rotenberg, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Are you satisfied, sir?
Well, I think there's a lot of progress that's been made. I agree with much of what Dan said. I think Facebook has moved to reestablish user control over their information, which is what we've pushed for all along. But I don't think this is the end of the story. I think one thing we've all learned from this episode is that users do care about online privacy, and perhaps we can't all rely upon Facebook to preserve our privacy settings. So we're still talking to the Federal Trade Commission. We're talking to Congress. We're trying to see if we can put in place a more comprehensive approach to online privacy.
We'll look at where the FTC and congressional interest may go, but how would you sort of describe or define, Mark, the big battle lines here? I mean, what are the competing worldviews when it comes to privacy and what that's going to be in the centuries ahead?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I listened to Mark Zuckerberg talk yesterday, and in many ways, I think Facebook is a wonderful service. I use it myself, but to say that because you want to share information, privacy becomes less important, I think reflects a bit of a misunderstanding about how communication services work. If we think, for example, about the telephone or email, which are powerful communication tools that people use on a daily basis, mm-hmm. privacy is actually very important. Privacy is part of what establishes our trust and confidence in those services, that when we're talking to people, it's the right people, we're not being intercepted by the government. When we're sending email, we know who the email is going to. Social networks take it, of course, a bit further, because now you can communicate with many people at the same time or the whole world at once if you choose. But that's really the key. It's your choice whether or not to make that communication to the world. And the problem that Facebook ran into that I think we need to think about quite a bit is where users had made decisions to limit disclosure, mm-hmm. to say, okay, this goes to family or this goes to friends. Facebook came back and said, well, you know, don't you really want that to go to friends of friends? Or don't you really want that to go to everyone? And what it was trying to do was to push the privacy settings toward the more open disclosure position. And that's what people were objecting to.
And in fact, when they would change their overall structure, they would just blow those old restraints away and open it all up, wouldn't they?
Exactly. And that's a problem, because part of Facebook's business model, of course, is to try to get people to reveal a lot of personal information. That's valuable to advertisers, of course, and it is, as Dan described, it is what makes Facebook such a powerful advertising platform. But there really has to be a fundamental respect, I think, for the user's decision about what information he or she is going to disclose. And as long as Facebook is pushing back on what users are choosing to do, I think this battle will continue.
If you listen closely to Mark Zuckerberg yesterday, he was conceding for the moment. They're changing their settings and the way the settings are respected. But listen to the philosophy behind it, Mark, and it seems as though he's kind of thinking, you've lost this battle, that this just isn't the internet age you're describing and privacy therein.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's true, of course. I think we're oftentimes seeing the opposite. When users become aware of what's happening with companies like Facebook and their personal information, they object. And we saw a lot of this happening, not only, of course, this time, but we saw it last year around the proposed change in terms of service. There were over 100,000 Facebook users who joined a group when that took place. We saw complaints around Beacon. It's an ongoing process, and I think Mark Zuckerberg is learning that lesson.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Facebook and online privacy. Facebook has blinked for now, but we're wondering where we're all headed here. Dan Fletcher is with us from Time Magazine. He wrote the big cover story on Facebook and privacy in this week's Time. And Mark Rotenberg is here, President and Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. He was right in the thick of getting Washington to pay attention to what was going on with Facebook. Dan, Mark, let's hear from our listeners. Helen in Nashville, Tennessee. Helen, you're on the air.
Yes, I am happy to see the changes. My big concern, though, is for the younger people. There are people as young as seven or eight, and they do not have the discretion or the development, emotional development, to have the discretion on what they will disclose. I have a godchild, just an example, I have a godchild who is 15, and she put videos on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are too many pedophiles out there. This population, too vulnerable in my opinion, don't know what they can do to help with that.
There's a new generation, and maybe they've got a different sense, but you're looking at vulnerabilities that might come with that. Mark Rotenberg, what do you say to Helen's concern? Is it just a concern of the unaware young or a broader concern?
Well, I think it's a good question that Helen raises. There is a law called the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act that essentially discourages kids from under the age of 13 from using services like Facebook, and Facebook has tried to respect that and make sure that people who sign up are over 13. But, of course, that still leaves open the question, what happens with teenagers who are putting all this personal information online? And I think in many cases they are probably putting stuff online they shouldn't. But at the same time, as long as Facebook respects their privacy settings and leaves them in control, they have the ability to take down information, to change profile information, to learn a little bit as they develop their online identities. And part of our privacy campaign was actually out of concern that in shifting control away from the users, teenagers who were trying to make some of those changes as they learn more about the service would find it more difficult to do so. So you see, part of this is, you know, trying to help kids understand what might make sense to put online and what not to put online. But at the same time, you also have to make sure that Facebook isn't playing with the privacy settings, because that would make it almost impossible even for kids who are trying to be careful to protect their personal data.
How do you describe to young Americans or young anybody growing up in this era what you mean by privacy? Do they even get it? Do human beings naturally understand what that is? Or is it a cultural construct that may be entirely different now than it was 20 years ago and entirely different again in another 20 years?
Well, there's no question that privacy is shaped by the media, the world in which we live, whether we're in an urban setting, whether we're in a rural setting. But having said that, I think it's also fair to say that just about everybody has some concept of privacy. And one of the keys we've come to realize over the years is that it really is about the ability of people to choose how to disclose information to others. Some people may choose to disclose a lot of information, some people very little. That reflects their individuality and their personality, and I don't think there should be a problem with that. But when people begin to lose that ability, when someone else makes those decisions for them, says, well, we really want to, you know, have all this data out there about you because we think we've got stuff that will be of interest to you, things start to change very radically, very quickly. That's not people choosing to give up their privacy. That's someone else taking their privacy away from them. And that's a large part of what this campaign with Facebook has been about.
Here's a little more of Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook CEO, yesterday, conceding what thousands of users had been saying, that Facebook's existing privacy controls had been confusing.
What we found is that, you know, the point of the controls is that you have control over your information. But if it gets to a point where it's so hard to use all the controls because there are so many of them, then you don't actually feel like you have control over your information, and that makes it so you don't actually feel comfortable sharing as much information as maybe you otherwise would have.
So they've simplified. Dan Fletcher, is there an old fogey aspect to this whole debate? Is there a new generation that maybe just doesn't care, that doesn't care if it's choosing or not, that's happy to be kind of transparent online or not?
You know, I kind of take dispute with that. I'm 22 myself, so I'm technically
You're
part
right
of
there.
This new generation.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, I think particularly since this last debate started, my friends have taken an increased interest in privacy. And I think in large part that's due to the graying of Facebook. You know, it used to be that it was your friends on Facebook or people in your own demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Now Facebook's fastest growing demographic is an older one. And that means parents are on there. That means coaches are on there, teachers, bosses. Every week there's a story of someone who loses their job because of something they posted on Facebook. So, you know, more so than any sort of shifting norm or anything like that, it's these real world examples that I think sort of have some impact and cause, you know, younger people to realize, hey, maybe I don't want to broadcast as much as I am.
Mark, what's your fear of what happens in life, in the world, when privacy gets eroded or blown away?
Well, it's not so much a fear. I mean, in Washington, we really do think about these issues in terms of their policy dimensions and their legal dimensions. And the starting point is that privacy is a fundamental right. It's something that people care about. It's something that our legal system tries to protect. It's an issue that our courts, you know, struggle with every day. And I think as long as we have this ongoing debate, this is actually very good. I mean, this is a whole generation of people who are now growing up online thinking about privacy, thinking about what Facebook should or should not do with their personal information. We've all learned a bit of a lesson, I think, through this process. My concern, if I have one, I guess, is that people would stop thinking about these issues, that we would simply assume, as some people have tried to say, oh, you know, privacy's dead or no one seems to care, but I think those folks turned out to be wrong this week.
Let's go to Michael in Waltham, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
You're on.
Okay, great. I have two questions. Number one, does the FTC or the FCC actually have the power, and do they have the will to insist that the default setting must be privacy? Zuckerman's response to that, when it's obvious that they don't want people to opt for privacy. My second question, and what's the answer to that? And my second question is, I know the Eurozone is much more sensitive about private information than the United States is. Thanks a lot.
Both interesting. Mark, to you on the first, I mean, does the federal government have the power simply to require that the default setting be full privacy, however defined?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know that the Federal Trade Commission has the authority to tell a company that they have to, you know, take the strongest privacy setting as a starting point. I know certainly some people would like to see that. We haven't argued that. But what we have said is that when a company establishes privacy settings or a privacy policy, whatever they choose, they really have to stick with it. And if a company tells people on the one hand, you know, here's our policy, those are your privacy settings, you know, this is the way things are going to operate with the service, and then subsequently changes them on the users so that the company is now disclosing information that the user didn't intend to disclose, That's where we think the Federal Trade Commission should get involved. And we're actually very disappointed that they didn't. It seemed to us, in fact, a very straightforward case that they could have easily opened an investigation, probably issued some fines against Facebook for what most people would describe as unfair business practices.
But if you're not lobbying for full privacy as a default setting, and you're the Electronic Privacy Information Center, then I guess nobody is.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I know that there people are, and you know, we're quite sympathetic to their views, but I also respect the fact that you know different businesses will take different approaches in this online environment. And we also have to respect the fact that users themselves will make different choices. But critical to all of this is that there has to be a fundamental respect when users make choices and when businesses announce policies. Those have to be enforced. And that didn't happen here. And the Federal Trade Commission, really, they just sat on their hands and watched this whole thing played out. And it makes me wonder, you know, if they have the ability really to protect consumers in this new online world.
Let's go to Bill in New Milford, Connecticut. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, I think this discussion is interesting, but to a certain degree a little bit pointless. I mean, some things that people have to remember. Facebook is absolutely free. They don't charge anyone anything. Secondly, it's voluntary. No one's got a gun to your head to join Facebook. Thirdly, it's a business. They have a right to make money off of what they're doing. And if people are that worried about privacy on Facebook, they should just quit or not join. And one final point, your previous caller, Helen, talked about 8- and 9-year-olds not being able to decide how they want their privacy settings. Facebook's terms of service says you have to be at least 13 to join, I'm sure.
Terms of service, but you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's up to parents to police that. But I mean, so the point is that, hey, this is a voluntary free platform. If you're that worried, don't join.
Bill, let us pick it up, and I appreciate your call. I want to invite in from Atlanta, Georgia, maybe to look at that. Daniel Castro is with us, senior analyst, resident Facebook expert for the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. He's written a lot about Facebook in a rather supportive way, including a recent paper called Facebook is Not the Enemy. Daniel Castro, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You hear our caller, Bill. He says, look, it's free. It's voluntary. It's a business. It's got to make money. Back off. If you don't like it, quit. Don't join.
Well, that's exactly the point that I've tried to make to a number of people. Facebook, as he said, it is voluntary. It's a choice. And if you join, you know what you're getting into. Facebook says that their mission is to make it easier for people to share information and that they want to create a more connected world. If you don't buy into that worldview, don't use them.
But, you know, what if it's become something like a utility, Dan? I mean, when the telephone was the big innovation, we didn't allow phone tapping all over the place. And it was voluntary.
Sure, well, there's a difference between, you know, phone tapping and, you know, allowing a company to run a business. Certainly, I would agree with many people who say we need clearer regulations on what government can do and what information government can access from Facebook.
What is the difference? We still don't let phone companies. They could make more money by listening in on conversations, learning what you are interested in, and selling you ads or something. But we don't permit that.
Right. Well, there's a difference. There's a lot of differences there. For one, Facebook, there's no individual at Facebook that's reading through anyone's personal information. That just doesn't happen. And they're also not selling information anywhere. But going back to your first question about is it a utility that we can't live without, I think the fact that you did see a very small group of people quit Facebook just goes to show that, you know, it's possible to live without it. Plus, you know, they may have 400 or 500 million people already signed up, but there's plenty more that aren't using it.
Mark Rotenberg, what do you say to our caller's argument? It's free, it's voluntary, it's a business, it's there to make money. If you don't like it, just go away.
Well, I agreed with almost everything you said up to the last point. You know, it's true, it's free, it's voluntary, but people have to be able to rely on what Facebook says it's going to do. And when Facebook changes the rules of the game, it's basically a bait and switch. And that's something that I don't think should be allowed. And I also don't think that people should quit Facebook. I think they should, you know, tell Facebook to honor its commitments. And if you think about the announcement that Mark Zuckerberg made yesterday, it's essentially that concern that he was responding to. He didn't get up and say, listen, you know, if you're not happy about what we're doing, just go away. I don't think that would have been satisfying at all. I think what he said was we probably pushed this too far too quickly. We're going to have to pull back, and we're going to have to put those privacy settings back to where people thought they should be, which is essentially what we've been arguing, and I think it's what people wanted to hear. So, you know, what Bill said is very interesting. A lot of people think about Internet services that way. They think, well, you know, why are you critical if it's simply free? But even for free services, when they're collecting a lot of detailed personal data, I think they have to honor those privacy commitments.
Dan Fletcher, is there a constituency out there that says, in its ubiquity, yes, it's voluntary, but it's become tantamount to a utility and therefore merits the kind of oversight that utilities have in this country?
You know, I haven't heard that argument yet, but I think Facebook's working very hard to get to that point. I mean, they want to create a version of the web where it's very, very difficult to get as many benefits as you would with a Facebook profile. And all their initiatives right now that they're sort of rolling out are designed and geared toward that, toward integrating Facebook as a platform across the web. So, you know, in that way, are they indispensable? No, not yet, but they're trying hard to be.
We've still got the question of how other cultures look at Facebook privacy. We won't forget it. Let's go to Hannah in Hebron, Connecticut. Hannah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I think that people already have complete control over the privacy on their Facebook just based about what they choose to put on or not to put on. If people have a bad reaction to what they put on, it's just like in real life with a conversation. You take, you know, you roll with the punches.
Okay, but what about when you're sharing with friends and, you know, you're talking about stuff, you don't expect to be broadcasting it to the world, and it ends up getting sold one way or another to advertisers, for example. Do you care about that?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I just turned 19 today, and I'm like...
Happy birthday.
You know, well, thank you. And... I'm not thinking about advertisers, but I know that my stuff's being broadcast on the world. I'm old enough to know that, yeah, whatever I put on Facebook is available to everybody. And I think people my age, which is the target group, are well aware of that.
And so you can be kind of self-regulating?
Sure.
Mark, what do you think? There's the voice of turning 19 today, Hannah, and she's, you know, it's on you, user. You know everybody can see it, so watch what you say. Watch what you put up.
Well, it's interesting, of course. I mean, I know a couple of teenagers who would certainly try to keep some information on Facebook from their parents, and other people certainly have had the experience of wanting to limit what they're sharing with their friends, as Dan said before, with employers and coaches and others who might take a different view of what they do. I think the, you know, question of choice is a very personal one, and some people may not care very much. I guess that's what Hannah's saying. Other people care more. But I think the right way to understand this question of choice is to give the user the control so that the user gets to make that decision. And coming back to your earlier point, Tom, about regulating Facebook as a utility, I actually think Dana Boyd, who's a researcher and very knowledgeable about the online world, has made a good case that we maybe do need to start thinking about regulating Facebook as a utility, in part because, as Dan mentioned earlier, it actually is their goal to try to incorporate and bring within Facebook most of the essential online services, and that creates all sorts of new dynamics.
Dan Castro, are we at risk of strangling something valuable in the relative cradle here if we get too mixed up with, you know, regulating Facebook? Are you worried about that?
I think that's a big worry. You know, there's been an outcry about privacy, but, you know, the kind of view that some people put forward where they complain about Big Brother, I'm worried about you know, Big Father, this paternalistic view the government needs to come in and tell everyone how their privacy settings should be set. That's a big risk for users, because if government comes in and creates regulations that are a barrier to Facebook being able to successfully monetize its business, that means the service won't be free. I mean, the outcry on privacy is nothing compared to the outcry we'd see if Facebook started charging.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Facebook and online privacy. Facebook has blinked in a big announcement yesterday that it will give users more simplified control over privacy on Facebook, the 500 million users of Facebook. But we're still wondering where we're headed here. Dan Fletcher of Time Magazine is with us. He had the big story on Facebook and privacy in Time this week. Mark Rotenberg is here. He pushed the issue in Washington, got a lot of people to pay attention there. No doubt part of what made, a big part maybe, of what made Facebook blink yesterday. And Daniel Castro is with us. He's a senior analyst at the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. I should say Mark is
President, Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. We've got lots of, actually, Facebook comments on what's going on here from our On Point Radio Facebook page. John saying, I do wonder where the new lines will be drawn. I don't find it acceptable to allow Facebook to determine these matters by a process of abusive trial and error with its user base. Here's Kristen saying, I'm not happy with Facebook about these important privacy issues. She says she's a dozen friends and more fans close their Facebook accounts because of privacy concerns. And then here's Scott, who says, until they backed down, Facebook was essentially eliminating privacy controls. You couldn't hide your interests from anybody anymore. Now we're on a new page, I guess. And Dan Fletcher, the announcement yesterday was that they're not going to be changing so frequently. But does the business model work, Dan? Fundamentally, if Facebook can't mine aggressively into all that personal info.
You know, it's still sort of difficult to tease out, but my understanding from yesterday's announcement is it really doesn't change anything Facebook can do for advertising. It just changes how that information is displayed. And again, you know, despite the outcry we saw here, I'm willing, you know, to bet that most people aren't going to go in and change their privacy settings. And that's sort of been Facebook's gamble this whole time. That's why they've been able to make these readjustments in stream. You know, there still is very much an onus on the user to figure out the information that they want to share and adjust those settings to make sure it matches their expectation.
Well, let's keep this specific and granular so that people can understand the kind of stuff going on here. There was this, I don't know what you call it, service or feature called Beacon, which you say has become to Facebook what Voldemort is to Harry Potter's world, the thing that shall not be named. What was Beacon and why did it end up causing an uproar, Dan?
So Beacon was really Facebook's first attempt to branch out across the wider web. It was a service that on a select number of commercial websites would sort of transmit your activity back to Facebook. Fandango was the example I think I gave in the magazine piece. So if I went to Fandango and I bought movie tickets, I'd be opted in, so it would automatically send back a little notification to my Facebook friend that says, hey, Dan's going to the movies. Here's what he's going to go see.
Mm-hmm.
It is in a lot of ways what Facebook Connect, which is a technology they have on their site currently, becomes.
So my commercial activity in the world, at least the online world, would be broadcast to my friends so that what? Maybe they'd go see that movie too.
That's right. That was Facebook's sort of thought behind it. And certainly, you know, there's a monetary benefit there too. You know, if I buy tickets from Fandango, maybe my friends are going to go buy tickets from Fandango as well. But users didn't like this feature, and Facebook initially made it very, very difficult to opt out of. You had to manually deselect that you wanted this information transmitted every single time. So after an outcry, very similar to the one we're seeing here, Facebook went in, dialed back the settings, and eventually eliminated Beacon entirely. So, you know, it's a very illustrative example that this has happened before in their history.
Daniel Castro, I have to say that doesn't sound very user-friendly to make me go in and manually unselect a feature every single time. That sounds like a pretty aggressive lean into my privacy.
I agree, absolutely. I don't think Beacon was a good move for Facebook. And as it was already pointed out, the reason it was so unsuccessful is because users didn't like it. Users in general are willing to trade privacy if they get something back in value. I think for most users, they weren't getting something back in value. But if you look at Beacon or the model that Beacon had, there's a lot of services out there now like Swipely that do just that. They allow you to show and broadcast all of your purchases online to the whole world. Lots of people are signing up for these.
Yeah, but you say it wasn't a good move for Facebook, but it's a move they took. They did it. They did it on purpose. They thought it through. It seems like it lines up pretty well with the way they want us to see privacy or the way they see privacy.
No, I don't think so. I thought what was really interesting from the press conference yesterday was that Mark Zuckerberg showed that over time, contrary to the popular perception, Facebook has actually been giving their users more control over their private information. You know, he showed the screenshots and how Facebook's evolved over time. At the beginning, you didn't have a lot of control. I think the real difference is, as was mentioned earlier in the program, that now the user base of Facebook is so big, you're not just sharing with your college or with people you know very intimately, but now there's a lot of people on Facebook who you're connected to. And so now you want to have more granular control. And that's what Facebook's been trying to offer.
Well, maybe, but it's been kind of forward, back, and since the beginning, there's an awful lot more information, different kinds of information that are now there. Let's listen to a little bit of Mark Zuckerberg himself. Of course, this is the very young founder, billionaire founder of Facebook, And in some of his remarks in this conference call yesterday, you can kind of hear his philosophy about privacy and people coming into this world wanting to share.
We believe that people come into this wanting to share and stay connected with their friends, and not just their friends, but the people around them in their community. And staying connected to your community is really important as well. When you give people control and they're in a good environment that they can share more, the sum of those two things is when people are able to share more, then that just adds up to make the world more open and connected. You have more understanding about what's going on around you, and you have more empathy for the people around you that you're connected to, and that's really what we're doing is all about.
Mark Rotenberg, how about it? When people, you know, are sharing more, you just have a better world. So what's the problem?
Well, I actually agree with Mark's sentiment. I think that's right. And I think to give people the ability to exchange information is a good thing. As I said earlier, it's, you know, much like the innovations with telephone and email. But that really doesn't answer the question, who makes the decision about what information is being shared? And part of, I think, what, you know, Mark continues to suggest in his statements is that, you know, Facebook has a better idea than its users do of what information about users should be disclosed. And that means that there's going to continue to be a conflict here. You know, one thing that we haven't talked about very much, but I think is worth considering also, is the way the data was flowing to the third-party application developers, or the data that was going to flow to third-party websites through instant personalization. I understand that's now being reworked a bit. Was completely opaque to users. People had no idea whatsoever.
Who was getting their info for what kind of applications?
Well, yes. I mean, you might sign up for, you know, a game like, you know, Snowball or Farmville or Scrabble or something else. Mm-hmm. And your social graph was basically going to those developers.
Your social graph, that's what's your Facebook profile in effect?
Well, it's profile information, it's friend information, it's likes and dislikes, but in fact it's not even clear what was going, because Facebook never made any of that data transparent to the end user. So whereas on the one hand you had a sense of control with what you posted on your wall or what you post on other people's wall or your interests that you display to your biographical stuff that you displayed, you could see it, you could alter it, you could delete it. Behind the scenes, there's a lot of data moving around about users that people had no understanding at all about and no control over. And that's one of the key reasons why I actually think we do need to start talking about some type of privacy law regulation, because those are activities that users can't control. There's no, you know, setting there that says don't disclose this information.
If you don't know what's happening, right?
We're completely dependent in those circumstances on Facebook for what it decides to do.
Daniel Castro, I'll come to you on that, but Dan Fletcher first. You sat with Mark Zuckerberg and talked with him. I mean, in the clip we just played, it sounds very high-minded. You know, when people are able to share more, it just adds up to make the world more open, more connected. It's a better world. But, I mean, a person could be surely rightly a bit skeptical about it. It's a business model. It's a business model.
Right. You're absolutely correct. I mean, this is sort of the interesting dichotomy with Facebook, is that they talk only about this social, sort of the social benefits to this. And they really don't ever like to talk about the advertising behind the scenes. I mean, even yesterday, sort of in the Q&A after Mark's phone call, he said it's not about the money. And, you know, I think that's true to a point. I mean, Mark's had chances to sell Facebook and make a tremendous amount of money for him personally. I do believe there's an aspect to what Mark says, that he's really interested in the social benefits here. But to say it's not about the money, that's just wrong. Or, you know, at least it's bad business.
Daniel, isn't there a kind of built-in conflict here when Mark Zuckerberg is being high-minded about this open world?
Well, I think he is honest when he says that Facebook is about giving users control over the data. I mean, I think I absolutely agree that his personal worldview is more sharing in general is better. But he has said very clearly, and Facebook has made it very clear, that they want to give their users control.
They said that yesterday.
No, I mean, he said that in an op-ed in the Washington Post on Monday.
But I mean, but they weren't doing that until in practice, until this uproar, or they would do it,
The uproar was about how easy it was to do this. It was never about giving users control. They've always been giving users control.
Yeah, but it was so complicated. He himself conceded yesterday it was kind of, you know, control that you couldn't control.
Well, it was difficult. I absolutely agree with that, too. But people did have granular control, and that was the whole point. He said we focused so much on giving people granular control, it spiraled out of control, so people had a hard time doing it. But he made an interesting point yesterday, too, when he said that over 50% of users have gone in and made modifications to their privacy settings. So users are taking control of their own data.
They may be. At the same time, they're really watching closely. Here's another Facebook comment from Joyce, who says the problem many have is that you can now search Google, for example, and come up with Facebook hits when that wasn't possible before. Also, she writes, there are trackers and applications which you don't always approve that can follow you wherever you roam online, not just on Facebook. These applications, Joyce writes, are keeping tabs on your internet usage, not just your Facebook usage. Dan Fletcher, did that change yesterday?
Well, the big step Facebook took was the ability to opt out in a single click to Facebook's platform. Now, Facebook's platform consists of a couple different things. It consists about all the applications, the games that Mark referenced here earlier. And it also consists of pieces across the web, you know, Facebook's efforts to sort of branch out onto third-party websites. By opting out of that Facebook platform, you do get a better control over who gets to see your information. You're really able to restrict it to Facebook.com and Facebook's application. And not much more. So, you know, in that way, I think it was a positive step forward.
Let's get a call from Cohasset, Massachusetts, and David. David, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a concern that your panelists have barely touched on, and that is a much more insidious use of the information that people are putting out and that gets disseminated, and that is companies that, like insurance companies, that can harvest data that they'll use to deny people coverage or increase their premiums, or credit purveyors who use this information to deny credit or charge usurious interest rates. One of your Facebook repliers said something about these apps that get this information just spread all over the place. And I'd like to hear more about the dangers of the use of that information.
Well, let us go to that side. Daniel Castro, is that going on? Insurance companies and credit purveyors getting in and then denying coverage or loans, or you name it.
Well, I think this gets into a really interesting point, and that's that when people care about their privacy, the thing they usually care about are harms. And if we look towards doing regulation on privacy, that's what we should be concerned about, making sure that those kind of practices can't happen. Now, I don't know of any instances where this has happened already. Certainly, you know, I've seen plenty of stories about divorce lawyers using Facebook to find out information about, you know, their opponent. But this is information that's out there, and it's just that Facebook is a tool to easily find it.
Well, Mark, what about our caller's concern on loans or insurance?
Yeah, well, it's another excellent question. It is a real concern. There's a lot of reporting being done now about the collection of Facebook data by employers, for example, making decisions about whether to hire people or whether even to promote their current employees based on information they can find on Facebook. And so I think that's an area that needs to be looked at more closely. But again, I also think it strengthens the argument that I made earlier for making sure that Facebook can't change the privacy settings on users. Because if you think that your photos are only going to be available to your friends, and then Facebook suddenly decides, which they did, by the way, last year when we went through this so-called privacy transition, that those albums would now become available to everyone, what's happened as a result of that change in the privacy setting is that information that you actually tried to limit access to prevent this kind of harm from occurring, you lost control over because Facebook decided to make it more widely available. And there's actually a famous story about Mark Zuckerberg when he was asked about this and said he didn't think it was a problem. Someone pointed out that photos from his college, you know, dorm days that he had in his own album set to friends only had been changed by his company to everyone and then became widely available. He had to go back and change his own privacy settings.
Of course, he could do that. It's good to be king.
Well, yes, it is. But, I mean, I thought it was a wonderful story because it actually underscored the point that we've tried to make throughout this debate, how very important it is to respect those decisions that users of the service have made.
One more quick call. Salt Lake City, William. William, our time is short, but you're on, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I don't use Facebook. My wife set me up an account, and I told her to delete it after she started setting up a bunch of friends. But what do you do when, I mean, it's easy for people to say, hey, don't use it, it's free service. But what do you do when your kids and your wife get on Facebook and start advertising to the world that, you know, your job problems or marriage problems and stuff like that?
Right, your kids or your wife or your friends? I mean, it's really interesting, Dan Fletcher. Pretty soon, whether we're individually even on or not, you're in a web of information and communication that is putting all this out there in a way that's quite harvestable?
Again, I think it speaks to the ubiquity of Facebook, the fact that situations like this can occur now. And, you know, if nothing else, you know, this debate hopefully will serve to illustrate to people that they need to think about these things. You know, absent anything else, there will always be that onus of personal responsibility to know what your kids are doing, to know what your family's doing, to decide the choices for yourself about the information you're willing to share. And I think, you know, maybe people will start to think about that more now.
We didn't even get to Europe and how that factors in here. Maybe grist for another day there. It's a Facebook world. We just live in it. A big change yesterday on how privacy controls are set, but lots of questions and education of a new generation coming up to be done here. Really grateful to each of you for being with us this hour. Daniel Castro at the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation joining us from Atlanta. Thanks for being here, Daniel.
Thanks for having me on.
Mark Rotenberg, President and Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, who put a sticky end that made a lot of things happen here. Mark, thank you for your vigilance on this front.
Thank you, Tom.
And Dan Fletcher at Time Magazine with your great cover story. Thanks so much for your work and your time today, Dan.
Pleasure to be here.
Listeners, thanks for joining us here on Facebook, wherever you may be. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.